search warrant, the search of defendant's home was unconstitutional, and all the fruits of that search are suppressed. It's called Fruits of the... Well, Bill has just joined me. So it, what was that legal term? Fruits of the...
Poisonous tree.
I couldn't remember. So that was the situation. Now, interesting, this case is interesting to me because what can happen and does happen is that even though someone who's accused of domestic violence is found not guilty, there is a separate hearing, and their weapons that have been seized can be seized and kept even though they've not been found guilty of the domestic violence, the underlying domestic violence. So that, I find, is rather interesting, in, especially in light of this new case. So in any event, this is, I'm not even going to play the news because my friend Bill Wolfson is here, and we're going to talk sports. And if Bill can figure out what mic he's on, it looks to me like he's on number four. So welcome, Bill. Put your headphones on, and let's see if that's the case. But before we talk much, let me at least tell everybody about the news. Not about the news. Nothing interesting on the news. About the weather. And, Bill, you'll be happy to hear that both Saturday and Sunday we're expecting sunny weather, high tomorrow of about 83 degrees. And, again, same on Sunday. I don't know what the shore weather is like, but looks like this is going to be a beautiful weekend and clear both nights. I know there was some rain this afternoon, but here we are. I don't know if you got to even hear about the score. I know the Packers had a preseason game last night. So did the Giants and the Jets. They were televised. I haven't even seen the Packers score yet. So tell us, what do you know about football this first week of preseason?
Well, it's been an interesting week. Preseason football to me is always about trying out how the new guys are going to fit in, how the old guys who've left, who created holes, are going to make some changes. And I'll tell you, I was out at the Steeler training camp.
Well, you know what? I'm going to have you hold. Whoa. I'm going to have you hold on that. Hopefully John will be here, and I know he'll want to be as part of that discussion. So let's talk about, you know, maybe something else, but I want to save your Steelers. But the only thing I would ask, are you now going to be a Steelers fan?
No, I don't think so, but, you know, they're predicted to win their division, and they're hoping to win nine games, and that may be enough considering, well, they're playing Cleveland twice, they're playing Cincinnati twice, they're playing the Ravens twice, so we'll see what happens. But they look pretty good in practice, but then again, every team looks good in practice. I want to talk a little bit before we talked about football, because everybody's raring to go on that topic, about two of my passions, boating and baseball. Today would be a great tomorrow and Sunday will be great boating days. Won't be too hot. It'll be bright and sunny, and I'm looking to get out on the water for both days. But I found something really neat that comes out of a boating magazine published by Boat US. They have a section called "My Best Day on the Water."
And this first of all, what water?
Yeah.
What water? I mean it. Where was this person on his or her best day on the water?
Well, give me a minute and I'll talk all about it.
Okay.
It was written by a woman named Jessica Pollack-Grudo, and it's in Vogue U.S. magazine. And the article is called "Therapy for My Soul." "This boat is my therapy," he said time and time again. "You see, my father spent decades on the water, sneaking off to Annapolis every chance he got, much to my mother's dismay. Through a son's death, a wife's cancer, and his own medical problems, he used his beloved boat to escape and recharge. When he died, he left me with a 40-foot 1981 Catalina, fully burdened with a leaking bilge pump, old navigation equipment, broken lights, and junk. My initial thought was, now I got to sell this thing. That was until my friend took me out on the boat to spread my father's ashes. was a gorgeous day. I felt the misty breeze, the sun on my face, and suddenly and dramatically, everything changed. I soon moved the boat to a harbor near my home in Philly and spent 5 months learning how to dock a 40-footer on my own, taking countless friends out, crashing into the dock several times, going for sunrise cruises, running her aground on more than one occasion, and spending every minute thinking of my dad. Those 5 months were expensive, stressful, and wonderful. They taught me a new way to connect with people I have and people I've lost. I've learned that I can creatively conquer new challenges if I remember one thing. I am my father's daughter. Upon reflection, I've come to realize that this boat has become my therapy, too. I always
very
think
good.
That's so neat.
But, you know, and I think what that shows, I don't know why it's in Western boating, since we're talking about Annapolis and Philadelphia, but the thing that there has to be something unique. I'm not a boater, so there has to be something unique about people like you, Bill, who spend so much time, energy, and love of boating. I mean that as a compliment, and it has to be kind of a fairly small group, but I'm sure that when you find, wherever you've been traveling around the world, if you find another person who has a sailboat, you immediately have a connection.
You most certainly do. Some of our closest friends, we've met boating in foreign countries. In the British Virgin Islands, many, many years ago, somebody pulled up and dropped an anchor next to us in a place called, a little island called Joost Van Dyke, and said in a British accent, "We're just about out of beer. Do you know where we can get some? Is there a liquor store or a grocery store on this little island?" And since we had just shoved off and we had been after provisioning our boat, when we had been given 100 bottles of beer by people who were leaving to go back to the States, we had enough beer to probably fill most of the Caribbean. So I said to the guy, "Well, come over here in your dinghy and you can help yourself to as much as you'd like." And they both, these two British guys, actually one British guy and one Welsh guy, looked at us. Their jaws dropped a little bit, so much for the stiff upper lip. But, of course, they came over, and in our refrigerator, we had 120 bottles of beer.
I guess no food.
No, there was plenty of food.
In a refrigerator on a boat, you had 120 bottles of beer?
Well, the boat was a 50-foot boat.
Okay.
So, and there was also a freezer. When you charter a boat from a good company, like the Moorings, you get a first-class boat with all kinds of great bells and whistles. So, you know, since that time, they've been to our house. We've been to their house in England and Wales. They've been to our house here in Flemington. We've had lunch with them a number of times in the States and also in the U.K. And we went sailing with them in England.
When they come here, do they always open your refrigerator first to see if you're such drunkards as you are when you're on your boat?
Well, so usually they head for the liquor cabinet instead of the fridge. But, you know, Jonathan Swift said something very interesting about sailing. He said, "He will go to the sea. He who goes to the sea for pleasure will go to Hades for a lark." there is something about being on the water, the fresh air, the sunshine, even the bad weather. The skill in that's required, the ability to force yourself to grow, and just to experience what's out there. Some people have gotten into sailing because they like the outdoors, but they don't particularly like bugs or sleeping on hard ground. So it's sort of like having a floating Winnebago that can also sink.
Mm-hmm. And sharks, they must like sharks. Well, one of my stories, Bill, and I don't know if I ever told you that, but you've had the same thing where you have a client who comes in who's had a contract or an agreement, and one of the worst divorce agreements that I ever saw. I had this man come in post-judgment, and he showed me his agreement. And, you know, you always bite your tongue. I really don't ever say that someone did a bad job. I might say that I would have done certain things differently, or I would have suggested, because it's really the client who's doing it. So I would have suggested doing certain things differently. But I had to ask him. I said, well, you know, who is the attorney who represented you? And I didn't know him, the attorney. And I said, well, how did you find him? He said, well, I had my boat docked down on, I can't remember exactly where, at the shore. And there was this attorney who also had a really nice boat down at the shore. So I knew him, and we talked back and forth. So obviously, you know, I just asked him if he could represent me in the divorce. And you know, that was many years ago, and it really reminded me, you know, how what poor choices people can make if they really don't look into whether or not someone is capable in that area of law. Because I'm sure the guy was a great boater, had a terrific boat, but boy, he certainly did not do this client any favors.
Well, Pat, I will tell you that if it comes to family law, hiring me to be your family lawyer would be the second biggest mistake of your life.
Well, but you'd be smart enough, Bill, not to take it.
That's right.
Just as if somebody came to me for bankruptcy, I would not handle the case. I just wouldn't. Or if someone came to me for a serious criminal matter, yeah, I wouldn't handle the case. I regularly do domestic violence cases. They're handled in family court. That's without a jury. It's very specific. Those cases I know, I understand. You understand the burden of proof. But there are certain other things that, you know, I just know my limits and know that there are other people out there that can do a better job.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. And, you know, picking a lawyer because you like his or her boat is not a good move for a client.
Well, guess what? My client found that out.
Yeah.
The hard way.
Number one. Number two, when I'm on my boat, and I do bring work on my boat, unfortunately, you know, an era of laptops and clients going overseas and needing things, or going to the other side of the country and sending you a text or an email at 2 a.m. from the other side of the world saying, draft this document for me. Well, you know, you get up and you do it because that's your job. But I digress. We were talking sports, and I wanted to read something.
Well, before you do that, why don't we do some spots, and then hopefully our friend John will be here, and not only can we talk sports, but we can talk what you did with the Steelers last weekend and what else is happening.
Don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Every Tuesday morning from 10 to 11, we will cover new apps, buying advice, technology news, and answer your questions. Good day, and join me on Tech Today on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Mm-hmm. Hello, this is Nicole Smith, host of Happy to Help. Would you like to discover the secret to happiness? I talk to volunteers, executive directors, fundraisers, and authors about how nonprofit engagement enriches their lives. We thrive when we have a sense of purpose in our lives. Philanthropy is the new community. Tune in to Happy to Help every Wednesday at 10 a.m. to discover how to find your purpose and live well by doing good.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business. Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design.
This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
What do you want to do when you grow up? When we were young, it's a question we were often asked. As we get older, our passions become clearer, our pursuits become careers, and if we're diligent, we begin to plan for the life we want to live. That's why, at Ameriprise Financial, we ask what's most important to you. Starting with our confident retirement approach, your Ameriprise Financial Advisor will ask questions that help you arrive at a customized plan that allows you to realize your goals today, tomorrow, and throughout retirement. With the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant. Call Michelle Heidi and Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 16 Lee Street, Units 1B and 1C in Clinton, New Jersey. The confident retirement approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, a registered investment advisor.
Okay, Bill, we're back, and it's the sports guys, and for today, it's the two of us for right now.
Well, before we talk about that, you know, I'm back from a Steelers training camp. I've got some pictures to show you guys, but the audience won't get to see them. Hopefully, I actually did get on the air remotely from last week. I have to listen and hear about how you actually managed to get me on. And I will tell you, Pat,
not very well.
A lot of fun out there. Latrobe's a neat town.
It is.
And the Steelers have kind of a neat thing going on at La Trobe at the College of St. Vincent, where when you go to the college, just about everything either says Steelers or has a Steelers logo. And I learned that the Steelers logo was actually the steel atom, the steel molecule. It's iron, carbon, and oxygen. Which is what you need to make steel.
Well, you know, I've always thought that the Steeler fans were probably a lot like the Packer fans, you know, and I've said this before, you know, working class folks, you know, Pittsburgh was a mill town, Green Bay was a paper company town. You know, if you went into Green Bay or even close to it, you would smell the paper mills, let me tell you. So it was very similar. People worked, they drank beer, and they watched football.
That's basically what you would say is Western Pennsylvania Steeler country. It's very interesting because it does have that sort of Green Bay Packer flavor to it with the Steelers. However, I think Pittsburgh is certainly a much larger city.
Oh, absolutely.
A much larger metropolitan area. They also have a baseball team and a hockey team. They don't have a basketball team, but they've got a lot of college sports. And, you know, between Pitt, University of Pittsburgh, Duquesne, a major basketball power, Pitt's a major football power in the NCAA football conference that they're in. And what you see is there's a real passion for sports because, and it tends to get people out of their houses and away from their TVs, except, of course, when the game is on. And there's a lot of participation by fans. Now, NFL tickets are not cheap, and it's not an exception in Pittsburgh. The Rooney family's owned the team since 1933 when the team was founded. And there's a great deal of wealth, private wealth, that went into large estates in towns like Ligonier that surround Pittsburgh, and some of the other towns that are around Pittsburgh, like the Carnegie family, the Mellon family. So you see a lot of that. But what you also see are the old steel mills and the old iron smelting places and the old railroad yards that are suddenly coming back. Right behind the municipal stadium, in fact, we parked in between the stadium and this steel mill that had been closed for about 15 years and then had opened 5 years ago and was back in production. One shift instead of the three that it had during World War II when they were cranking out steel because they had to. But they have found uses a lot of the old, what they used to call Rust Belt buildings. So towns like La Trobe, surrounding Pittsburgh, are back in the business of metal creation and fabrication. And, you know, the whole part of Pennsylvania developed because they found coal and they found iron ore and they found rivers.
That's right. And, of course, and we're a sports program, so we don't have to talk about how some of these rivers are now being gentrified with nice restaurants, etc. But let me ask you, it always seemed to me that there were a lot of football players who came out of Pennsylvania, that there were a lot of these high schools that really had good players, and it's interesting. You don't see it much anymore. But, you know, I remember how many of the NFL players never went to college. You know, they came directly, played out of high school. Some of them had some community college. And I'm trying to remember who it was who went to culinary school because I thought he must have really had a lot of razzing when he first started playing. He was a good player, and I can't remember who it was.
Hopefully he was a good cook also.
Not sure, but he graduated from culinary school.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Joe Namath, who was the Jets' only Super Bowl-winning quarterback, comes from Aliquippa, Pennsylvania, just north of Pittsburgh. And he went to play college ball at Alabama, I believe, for Bear Bryant.
Well, that's because so many of these kids, do leave. I know a big thing in Indiana and Michigan is how many of the kids from Indiana will go to play in Michigan. And, of course, Indiana was always also a big, big basketball. Unlike most of the other Midwestern states. And I never really understood how that happened. But when we look at it, there are lots of things. I just met somebody yesterday who's originally from the Dominican Republic. Well, baseball in the Dominican Republic is just huge, where in most of the other countries, and we think of the Dominican Republic as Spanish, I mean, certainly Spanish-speaking, in most of the countries, it's soccer. So, but it is interesting, I think, also sometimes if there is a coach who's an exceptional coach, that's when you see, so many of talented people. I know my husband, too bad he didn't have a good baseball coach because he was probably a better baseball player than he was a football player. And, of course, it also depended on what time of year the sports were played. Now, you can imagine how the basketball coach tried to recruit my husband.
Oh, he's a tall guy.
6'3", big guy, and very athletic. Now, you know why he didn't play basketball? And I would say that there are lots of kids in the Midwest who didn't play basketball.
Well, if you're a tall guy or gal these days, you're going to get asked by somebody if you want to play basketball. And not everybody is really into it. I'm not.
Oh, no. Dave played pickup ball, loved it, but would not play on a team because they played basketball when hunting season started.
Oh.
And most of these kids, as soon as they were out of school, they were out hunting. And
well, that explains it. But, I want to talk a little, since we're still in baseball season, I want to talk a little bit more about
Good.
The mystique of baseball. And you may have seen the movie Field of Dreams.
Of course.
Everybody has. It's a wonderful movie. And Kevin Costner and James Earl Jones are wonderful in that movie.
Well, James Earl Jones especially. But, it really was a fun movie.
It was. The man just oozes. Mm-hmm. And I want to tell you that the Field of Dreams is about to be recreated for real. Let me tell you what's going on in baseball. In 2020, the Yankees and the White Sox will play on the Field of Dreams in Dyersville, Iowa. Major League Baseball announced it today. They'll play the White Sox a year from now on August 13, 2020. And Major League Baseball is going to build an 8,000-seat temporary stadium lot at the movie site with construction scheduled to begin this month. The Yankees are thrilled about this because, as Hal Steinbrenner said, Field of Dreams captures the pure essence of baseball, and it continues to bring generations of fans and families together to embrace its timeless roots. It's a distinct honor for the Yankees to showcase our game in an iconic and intimate setting while preserving the movie's legacy. Now, the interesting thing is the league has a video of Aaron Judge, who has been photoshopped into a scene in Field of Dreams where he comes running out on the field and asks, "Hey, is this heaven?" Before Kevin Costner's character, Ray Kinsella, says, "Nope, it's Iowa." So I'm looking forward to seeing that commercial. There have been little whispers about this all year. But baseball is truly the quintessent American game. People played baseball in a recognized fashion even before the Civil War. And it was the entertainment, whether you were in the Midwest or on the eastern shore of the Delmarva Peninsula, or way out in Oregon or up in New England, it was what you did in the summer as a kid and as a young person.
But, one of the things is that Well, not in the city. In the cities, they played stickball. I understand that. But, you know, you could play baseball almost anywhere. You know, you had a bat, a ball, and hopefully you had a glove. But you know what? You played even if you didn't have a glove. So all of these little kids in the Midwest, and this was before Little League. So I'm not sure when Little League started, but I'm sure it was much more popular on the East Coast than it was in the Midwest. We didn't have Little League. Good thing about that is the girls and boys played because there also were not enough boys, so they needed us to get a team, and especially if we had two teams. So frankly, although I grew up playing touch football, I played a lot more baseball and softball than I did football.
Well, I will tell you that as a second baseman playing both pickup softball and hardball, very often shortstop was a girl who had a great arm, good range, and she could hit. And every summer in college, when I would come home to see my folks, there was always a pickup game, and she and her boyfriend said, "Hey, are you going to play second?" And I'd say, "Sure." And it was fun because if I got a grounder, there's a guy on first, I could flip the ball to her. She glided, ballerina-like, across second, and she always made a very accurate throw to first. And guys didn't want to slide, which was really, at least not slide into her. And she was a big, strong young woman. I always thought she was attractive. And she had a very, very good way about her, positioning herself based on the hitter, and she would move with the pitch. So she was pretty talented. She eventually went to a college, I think, in Ohio or Tennessee, and played women's softball in the 70s. I don't know what's happened to her.
Okay, well, I don't know if John is going to join us, so maybe we should start talking about what you wanted to share about going to Steelers camp. And I'm sure that what you would also say is, hey, for other people, take a trip. I mean, find out about these just as if they did with preseason baseball. I mean, preseason baseball now in Florida has really become a big tourist attraction. So tell us a little bit about your trip to see the Steelers practice, and did you see any young player? That's what I'd be interested in. Did you see any of the young, especially the rookies, anybody drafted this year who seemed to stand out?
Well, I have to tell you, I'm not really that familiar with the Steelers roster. I did see Ben Roethlisberger, who did not dress for practice, basically walking around and talking with the coaches. The Steelers have an interesting team. They're predicted to win 9 games. I don't know the roster. There is a Juju. I forget the guy's real name, but he is a wide receiver just recently drafted, who everybody is looking to have a great season. And one of the things I'd like you to do, Pat, the door apparently has been locked. I'm going to go downstairs and get John.
Oh, you talk, and I'll
go. You talk, and you let him in.
You talk, and I'll go back in.
Well, are the 2019 Steelers a serious dark horse to win the AFC Championship and the Super Bowl, since the clubhouse chemistry has been cleaned up and sent to Le'Veon Bell has been sent to New Jersey to play for the Jets? Or are they outclassed by the upstart Browns in the AFC North? Tonight, we're going to see the Steelers play the Buccaneers at 7:30. And everyone's going to be able to answer some of those questions and mull a few of them over. The Steelers, who have been aggressively recruiting and making a number of good trades are now thinking clearly that they can win 9 games and probably win the AFC Conference, North Conference. So we're going to see. Pittsburgh is an interesting team. They certainly have the ability, Ben Roethlisberger, to win 9 or 10 games. And the odds makers say that both New England and Kansas City have better odds to win the AFC. The Steelers and the Browns are up there, especially with Mayfield. And my friend John Manfred has just walked in. What are the Steelers' odds of winning the Super Bowl? They're about 20-1. For the Browns, it's about 15-1 because of Mayfield and Odell Beckham, perhaps. But as far as I'm concerned, you've got to play the game, and who knows? The Steelers may very well pull it off. Who are the guys to watch? Well, let me dig some of those out while I let my friend John talk about the Dead Sox.
Good afternoon, everyone, and hi, Gil, hi, Kat, and we've got to get a little bit more specific here about this, Bill. I think I'm not sure, but you might be referring to the four-time 21st century and current reigning World Series champion Boston Red Sox team. You might be. I'm not sure. Then again, I think that's a small universe because there aren't any other four-time champion teams in the 21st century. But having said that, I have to commend the Yankees for not only having a superlative season, but doing it with relative unknowns. Now, could some of these guys be flash in the pan, lightning in a bottle? Yeah, but you know what? They managed them right, coached them right, and they got that result. So I think they get credit for it. There's just two things, actually three things now, that you have to worry about, Bill. Somebody called Justin Verlander, Charlie Morton, and now Zach Greinke. I got to tell you, Bill, not that I'm enamored of the Houston Astros, but I think they're going to be a very tough team to beat.
I think you have a point. The Yankee starting pitching is not what we had hoped to see. I know that Tanaka has had a tough year. The Yankees have had injury after injury after injury. And
somehow managed to keep winning. They get enough offense to win. They blow teams out. So even when their starters aren't pitching well, you know, they score 8-10 runs. They're on a record pace. It's just amazing. And they've done it without some of their big stars.
Well,
so, you know,
I am convinced that the problem is the baseball. I think the baseball is juiced.
Bill, yeah, talk about that. I've heard about, but I'm uninformed on that. What is the controversy?
By the way, I have to say, listen carefully, Bill. You're not going to hear John compliment the Yankees very often.
That really wasn't a compliment. It was more of an acknowledgement. It really wasn't a compliment, Pat,
okay.
But you're right.
Well, the day is circled on my calendar. August 9th, a day that...
Why is this day different from all other days?
John said something nice about the Yankees for once. Meanwhile, back here in New Jersey, you know, they talk about the Steelers house cleaning and bringing Le'Veon Bell to New Jersey with the Jets. That's like the old thing of keep New York clean, dump your garbage in New Jersey.
Bill, New Jersey lost at the Supreme Court level on that because garbage is commerce.
That's true. It is interstate commerce.
I may have done poorly in con law, but I remember the garbage case.
There you go. Well, it is
something, I don't know, Marbury versus Madison is, you know, whatever.
Not quite. But, you know, you've got Le'Veon Bell, who did not play against the Giants. And he hadn't played in about a year. And you always have to wonder about, is the guy toxic in the locker room?
Well, I think they're just more holding him out, letting him get more integrated into the system, and reducing exposure to to injury, Bill.
Yeah, and you'll.
But I agree. He should have played at least a series.
Get exposure to injury.
I mean, if you can play Aaron Rodgers a series in a preseason game, I think Le'Veon Bell can take a few handoffs.
Well, you couldn't have seen that, could you? Because I didn't even. It wasn't on television.
No, I think that with the, this first week they didn't televise a lot. There were several Thursday
well,
nights.
Well, they did. They did the Giants and Jets.
Right.
Here. But.
But
and
not
they
even
did.
Saturday.
I think they did the Bills, and I don't know. Any in any event, no, we couldn't find it anywhere, and we get satellites. So believe
yeah,
me, we
I
look.
Mean, isn't that amazing? But I think Rodgers did play the first quarter.
Oh, did he?
I think he did play the first quarter.
Well, I didn't have time today to look
yeah.
at what happened.
But how about that Daniel Jones? One,
whoa.
May only be one drive in a very small sample
but,
size, but he looked pretty good.
He looked. Very good.
Of course.
I mean, he was accurate. Don't they talk about him not having a good arm?
Yeah,
it
the
didn't
rap
look
on
like
him
it.
Was that he doesn't, he may not have an NFL arm that it's not a real strong arm. It may just be adequate, but not a real strong arm. That's,
well, that pass that he threw, you know, I'm not sure how
small
long it
window
was.
And he tucked it
he
in.
He tucked it in, and it was not a short pass.
Right.
You know,
and,
so
he was playing against backups.
True.
One commentator said that had he been playing against starters, they probably would have batted that ball down or picked it off, meaning the ball
really?
Didn't get there as quickly as some other quarterbacks might have thrown it. Meaning, translation, doesn't have a real strong arm, and we'll see. Time, you know.
Well, I heard a couple people say that the naysayers – you know, might have shut up for a while.
Yeah.
But you may have football tonight with the Steelers hosting Tampa, but the real attraction, I think, is in baseball. You've got the suddenly red-hot New York Mets coming back from the dead. They stepped
ahead. That is amazing to me.
That's why they call them amazing Mets. They stepped ahead of the Phillies last night for the last wild card spot.
That is absolutely amazing.
And now they're playing three games with the Nationals this weekend. And this is going to be the test, whether the Mets...
They got to take two out of three there.
Right.
And if they do, they're in pretty decent shape with that pitching staff.
Right. And remember, and John, you've hit the nail on the head, as usual. The Mets pitching staff, the starters, I think, are better than the Yankees starters.
Oh, I don't think there's any question about that. Certainly on paper. But I think in practice, same thing.
Very true. And look, the Mets somehow managed to steal Marcus Stroman from Toronto. Because Toronto did not want to trade him within their division.
Right. They could have. In fact, rumor has it they could have got more from the Red Sox or the Yankees, but they just wouldn't do it. And I understand that.
You're right. I mean, but, that's like trade a top, football player to someone else in their division. I mean, we all think it's pretty stupid, or I thought it was pretty stupid when Mac went to Chicago. I can't believe that he was traded, even though it wasn't in their conference.
Yeah, it was out of the conference.
Well, it was out of the conference, but still. I mean, I can't believe that they didn't really need him.
Well, they couldn't sign him. So, the Raiders got two first-round picks. The Raiders may get the last laugh on that. They used them on their number five, the number five pick in the draft. They took somebody who probably was a second-rounder, but who knows.
Well, the exciting thing is tonight the Mets are going with Marcus Stroman, who will be pitching at Citi Field for the first time as a Met. Then we have Noah Syndergaard Saturday and Zach Wheeler Sunday. And Stroman's going to be opposed by Washington's best pitcher, Steve Strasburg, who I think is a hell of a pitcher. So we've got some interesting baseball here. Pete Alonso, the rookie phenom, has rediscovered his swing.
More important, who's out injured on either of those teams? Because you have two good pitchers, then the question is anyone that's really... they need desperately, are they all going to be in the lineup, and are they hitting well?
Well, remember, the Mets swept four games from Washington in late May, and leaving Washington 19-31 through the first 50 games. But since May 24th, the Nats have gone 42-22. So these are two teams waking up, and let's see where they can go. As Tug McGraw liked to say, you got to believe. The amazing Mets. Let's find out what happens. Meanwhile, John, what about the Giants' performance last night?
Well, you know, it's hard to say with the first preseason game, and conceitedly the Jets played very few starters at all. And again, I think it played well for the Giants because it, you know, you get a rookie who's been under fire, sixth overall pick, and you want to let him build some confidence.
Right.
So the Jets kind of set him up for that. You know, he didn't go against a steel curtain or a Philadelphia kind of defense or Dallas kind of defense, you know. I mean, the Jets' best defensive, it's a decent defense, but they had mostly second stringers in there and even some taxi squad players. So what it did was is it gave him something to build on. But on the defensive side of the ball, I think the Giants have a lot of work to do. They're definitely better. They definitely got some upgrades on the defensive line. They got to generate a pass rush because today it's all about protecting your guy and rushing the other guy.
Yep.
No question about it. Well, the Giants certainly have upgraded their O-line to protect Eli Manning last year. The real question this year is, will there be a quarterback battle as Manning begins to bow out?
Yeah, I would call it a battle, Bill. I think it's an interesting observation. I think that's probably more accurate. And on the OL, I mean, you've got, I believe, four of the five guys weren't there a year ago. Soldier's the only guy. And then during the year, they had switched two guys. They drafted somebody, and then they picked up a very good guard from Cleveland in the Beckham trade. And they signed a good free agent, I think, from San Diego there during the season. They've re-signed him. So I think by most people's observations, they're significantly better. Now, does that make them a great offensive line? No, but significantly better. And they were so bad before that almost any improvement would be significant.
Well, and that's what I'm also looking for with the Packers. I mean, they
you need that. Otherwise, Rodgers is going to be done. I mean, he's had many big injuries now the last couple of years because they let the line go.
Yep.
Well, the thing that strikes me about the Packers is they're a mess. They're wasting Aaron Rodgers.
Well, that's the thing.
That's the point. You know, it was interesting. I watched something the other night about the Tampa Bay coach, and seems like a really interesting guy. I'm going to have to follow up on him a little bit more.
The Tampa Bay Bucs coach?
Yeah.
Really? Who?
Yeah.
Who's that?
Isn't his name Aaron? I hate to say this. I was kind of half watching, half working. I think his name is Aaron's. He'd been coaching. He went out of coaching. He came back.
Oh, well, the guy was in Arizona for a while? That guy? It's Aaron's, not Aaron. Bill, can you pick up who the Bucs' present coach is?
Who the Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
I don't follow Tampa Bay.
Well, I don't usually either, but, you know, and they were talking about how many losing seasons they've had.
Yeah.
I can tell you, the only time I've seen a game in Tampa, Buccaneers versus the Packers lost. So I guess that was a few years ago.
Well, they've had a few good teams over the years. It's Bruce Arians. That's what the guy
Arians.
Used to be in Arizona. It's Bruce Arians.
It's Arians.
Excellent coach.
Bruce Arians used to be Temple University's coach.
Yeah.
Yeah. I said Arians. Excuse me. It's Arians. You're right. Yeah. But
he
also seemed like so different than most of the other coaches. Although
he's what I would call a scholarly coach, somewhat erudite, takes a scholarly approach to the game, yet he's tough.
Well, and apparently his team, the guys love him. I mean, just
he's
absolutely love him.
That's for
and
sure.
One of the things is apparently, and I don't know if it's certainly not every Friday night, but, you know, he'll invite the players over, come on over and have a drink. And the one thing that he has had some health problems, and so apparently every year he ends up in the hospital. And so last year he quit. And because his
and
wife
that
told
is becoming
him.
So common. Remember John Fox?
Yep.
He was in and out all the time. You've really had that happen. Because I think the stress of coaching
is
so, not just to do the job, but the constant scrutiny you're placed under and the threat of being of the ignominy of being fired.
Well, I mean, I thought that you – and you see how much older these guys generally look after a couple of years. I mean, Andrew Reid was the one example that, you know, Andy looked like he was so unhealthy for so long.
You know, it's a burnout job, I think. I can't imagine anything more stressful than being a big-time football coach. Yeah, they make millions of dollars, but they burn out. And, you know, you've got great coaches like Bill Belichick, and then you've got the opposite end of the spectrum, people who will go unnamed who managed to coach both the Eagles and the Jets. So you've got a real spectrum of talent. And sometimes coaches get lucky because they've got the right players around them and the right assistant coaches. Other times they may go slogging for 20 years, bouncing around the league, and suddenly they catch the magic in the bottle, and there we go. You know, the Steelers are playing tonight, and the guy that I think everybody ought to watch is number 19, a wide receiver, Juju Smith-Schuster. He's a second-year guy out of, I believe, Ohio. And he's got tremendous speed, good hands. I watched him practice, and I was impressed when they were doing both catching drills and catching and evading four and five defenders and also jumping and catching while in double coverage. He managed to come down with a ball almost every time. So exciting guy to watch, and he's something of a character. He's really a fan favorite for those Steeler fans.
Well, and that was why this program, and by the way, if anyone has a chance, it comes on. It was Brian Gumbel was one of his segments with, and say it again, Bruce Arians. That it was a segment on Brian Gumbel, and I like his program. I mean, I almost never see a segment on that program that I don't like. I mean, they really do some very interesting programs, I think. I don't know if either of you watch it. I don't even know what station it's on. But it's
HBO.
But it's something, yeah, it must be, because that's usually all we watch. But I have to say, I thought they did a really excellent job. And, I mean, this coach was likable. I mean, really likable, even if you're not a, you know, Buccaneers fan. And so you have to hope that, you know, he and his team do well, unless they're playing the Packers, which they won't be doing this year. And I, frankly, have heard very little about the Packers' new coach. Maybe I'm just not following
it. I think, a low profile. That's a high-profile position, a lot of pressure, and I think he's weighing low and trying to, you know, build his team and see what he can do. But I think if you're a guy like that, you want to stay in the background. I hope that if you wind up with a 9-7 or a 10-6 year, that you're not going to get clobbered too bad.
Yeah. Well, no, he.
I'm hoping that the Packers can go 9-7.
No, I hope they go.
I think they're going to have to win 10 games.
I think they have to win 10.
The Bears and the Vikings are probably going to make the playoffs.
They have to win. You know,
I think you need 10 wins.
I think at least 10.
And not only that, you can't lose head-to-head and lose the tiebreaker.
Exactly.
It depends which 10 games you win.
And like last year, I mean, you can't come out with a tie.
No.
Yeah. You know, tie is as good as a loss.
It really is, or at least it certainly was last year.
It's a tough thing for Green Bay because, frankly, it's a great town. It's a great area. They have great tradition. They deserve good football, and they don't get it right now.
Right. Yeah. Well, and this year it's going to be interesting. You know, they play all the teams, either play out here or play them. Unfortunately, I thought I was going to be in Wisconsin. I was going to go to the Dallas game, but they're playing down in Dallas. But they're playing out here. They're playing the Giants. And
the Eagles.
Yeah, but aren't they playing the Eagles in Green Bay?
I thought they played the Eagles at home late in the season, though.
Okay, well, you guys talk. And I guess I don't even have that with me.
I'm hoping
I think they play in Green Bay.
I'm hoping to get to one Eagle game, and I'm also hoping to get to one Jets game. And the Jets game I'm hoping to get to is December 22nd with my brother-in-law, Lance, and anyone else who wants to come, because...
You may be the only people there on December 22nd, depending on how what the Jets season is like.
Well, remember something. You can always count on Jets tickets being dumped towards the end of the season, but maybe not this year. Sam Darnold's a real thing, I think.
Yeah, but you also have people who travel at that time of year, so I think you're going to be able to find tickets. In fact, that was my problem with a couple of the games that I'd like to see. You know, they're just either right before Christmas or right after Christmas.
Well, I think it's so close to Christmas, December 22. It'll be a 1 o'clock kickoff unless the networks do something drastic. So my thinking is that the Jets will probably be an 8-8 team, and the Steelers could easily be still in contention at that point. So it would be a fun game. My brother-in-law is willing to come out here and perhaps bring my nephew, so we're going to see. Meanwhile, moving along, we've got the ability to
If you must know, Pat, I'm looking at the Packers website to try to find their schedule.
Oh, I know their schedule, and I should have it memorized by now.
And
I was hoping, Pat, why don't you recite it for us?
Question is that Eagle game is in Green Bay.
It is.
I stand corrected.
Yeah,
folks, it's 5:59. It's going to be a beautiful weekend up there. I don't know about you, but I'm getting up off that couch and heading down the shore. How about
you know, on October 27, Packers Chiefs, which every time they play conjures up images of January 12, 1967.
Why is that?
Wow.
That was the day the Super Bowl won, Bill. Packers Giants, December 1 at the Meadowlands. You know, it is fun to look at schedules and look at games and... You know, the last game of the year is against the Lions in Detroit.
Oh, I know that.
And that may,
They've got to go to
Minnesota.
And they're always playing Minnesota very late in the season.
Yeah, the week before.
Minnesota, of course, is, you know, indoors. Isn't that right after Christmas, the Minnesota game?
It's just before. It's on the 23rd.
The 23rd, right
so
before
it's the
Christmas.
Sunday before.
Right. But that's indoors. And
now,
even though that's right before Christmas, that will be an almost impossible ticket to get.
The Chiefs game is in Kansas City, in Arrowhead.
Right.
That is going to be a very tough game to win.
They're going to have a tough time with the Chiefs, I can tell you that. Andy Reid is a great coach.
You know, it's really a shame, and they've had some, you know, they have an illustrious history and so forth, but you really have to feel bad for them. But for that defensive lineman lining about 6 inches offside, they would have won the Super Bowl because they would have beat New England. They had New England beat. All they had to do was snap the ball once and sit on it. And they would have mm-hmm. I think they would have creamed San Diego. So that was a lost Super Bowl, and they traded that. They got him out because he could never come back. After lining up in the neutral zone on the last gas play, and but for that, New England wouldn't have won a sixth Super Bowl. So you had that, and you had the New Orleans debacle on the pass interference call, open the waters for Brady again. It's amazing.
And you know,
oh, he is so lucky. It's ridiculous.
Oh, just playing in the AFC East for 20 years.
Yes. But somehow, you know, it's like he's Teflon Man, you know. And then what he was so lucky is even when he was suspended, you know, it was early in the season.
Four games, the first four games, which made him fresher.
Exactly. And he had a good enough team around him that they could carry those four games.
Correct.
It wasn't like he was losing
in those four
games.
Exactly.
It wasn't like they were coming in, you know, 0-4, four losses, and then he had to make up for it. So,
correct.
In any event,
to rest.
So,
folks, have a great weekend, and we'll see you guys all next week. Are we ready to recycle to...
I actually don't understand why they don't do the automatic rewind.
It, it, it re-